We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC 264. The trilogy is here. Dustin Poirier, he's the A side, and don't you bleep and forget it, taking on the notorious Conor McGregor in the rubber match of their trilogy. And we're going to break it all down for DraftKings, FanDuel, SuperDraft. Maybe at some point we should mention SuperDraft a little bit. They have MMA. But I'm your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. We're going to talk about all those things with the co-host, the analyst, the really important guys. I'm just here to drive this ship of insanity. It is Chris Olsen. You can find him on Twitter at RealChrisOlsen. And Joe, who you all know and love. And you can find him on Twitter at SunSu. Guys, are you ready for UFC 264? And Joe, are you ready for me to show up at your house and eat all the delicious food you're going to have over there?
Yeah, I'm a little worried. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to have, I know that whenever you come over, I have to set aside a lobster tail and a cannoli for your wife, or else like she won't ever let you come back. So,
That's
you
fair.
know. And then Kevin, of course, like he calls them bear claws, which is completely different than a lobster tail. Like, so he's like doing his he's doing his DFS Army pod, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna be eating bear claws at Sun Tzu's house." I'm like, "No, you're not. We're gonna do lobster tails. I'll get a few cannolis. I'll set one or two aside for your wife, and
then
you. I'll order some chicken parm." The biggest news of the day, though, I mean, is not Aldana missing weight by 3.5 pounds, but I found out that Chris Olsen is only 5'6". Man,
Oh no.
that is friggin' short, dude. Like 5'6".
I actually sit on phone books to reach the camera.
Did your mom did your mom have a nicotine habit like during birth, or like what was going on with
that? You
or?
Know what? I don't know the answer to these questions. We can probe this later.
Okay.
I mean, Joe, every podcast, he hates short people. God forbid you
I don't. I don't
arm
hate.
Kid.
No.
The
No. I don't
lollipop
hate.
kid is gonna beat the crap
You
out
know
of
what? There are a couple of short kings over here, and don't forget it, Joe.
I know I don't hate
don't
short people. It's
it.
Just I don't understand it. Like with all the antibiotics and food, and like there's no reason for anybody to be born short anymore.
No, but in chat, I want you guys to. I am a little under. I mean, a shade under 5'9". Is that chat? Is that short? Is it average? I think it's probably a little bit below average height, but I don't think I'm short. I go to Joe, and he's like, "Hey, Tiny, come with me."
In chat, what's the best height to be, and why is it 5'6"?
Okay, I wouldn't go that far. Well, we are off topic. You know what? These guys, if you're watching in chat, first of all, thank you. Welcome back. We want to make these guys some money. Before we do that, I'm going to do the read. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Season-long daily fantasy for all sports. Check it out. Also, subscribe on YouTube. It is RotoWire is the YouTube channel. The podcast you can find on RotoWire MMA. Let's talk some fights. Non-5'7 and three quarters. My name, Alan Arnofsky, 9,000. And a new thing I'm going to do, because I don't want to leave him out anymore. I'm going to give DraftKings and FanDuel pricing. And we can talk about odds. I'm going to skip the odds now. And we can talk about that in the breakdown if it's really warrants it being talked about, which in this fight, oddly enough, it
It
does.
does.
Yeah, Amanovsky, 9,000 and $18 on FanDuel. Yao Zhong Hu, 7,200, $11 on FanDuel. And why is that important? Because Yao Zhong Hu is nearing pick'em at this point. He is the odds value on the card. He is going to be super chalky. And I'm picking him in this fight. And frankly, guys, it's because of the odds value. If you Before he, I'm gonna cut. I'm gonna give it to Chris first. I'm gonna cut his legs out before he even goes. If you try and technically break this fight down, get the hell out of here. Neither one of these guys have fought in 3 years. Yao Zhong Hu's lost to Rashad Coulter. Alan Amadovsky's going to sleep to John Phillips. We're about to basically watch two clowns get in a clown car, punch each other, and we'll see who's gonna come out. Give me the guy who's cheaper. And play it in GPPs though. We should see a finish here. So like it in GPP. Stay away from Amadovsky in cash, and who you can play him because +110 last I saw for $7,211. Just play the odds in this one and move on. Chris, go ahead and now technically break this down.
Well, my analysis of over 27 fights. No, I think
John,
I will
you
say
need, you need your head examined and a lobotomy if you watch 27 fights of these two.
Well, I think who only has five total, right? Isn't he like three and two or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I will say is that, I mean, at least Hu is tough. He took a lot of big shots from Coulter and didn't fall down. And Amadovsky, you know, got pretty much sent out of there with the first shot that John Phillips hit him with. So I like Hu as well, just for that reason. I don't understand the price gulf. It shouldn't be there, as you mentioned. But, you know, if the chalk is going to be there with the line value, maybe that pushes me to a few more shares of Amadovsky because, you know, I think both of these guys are going to swing to knock each other out. And one of them is going to succeed. And I would rather be on the side that gives me the leverage play. So I think who's going to win. But now that that line value is there, I'm going to have more shares of Amadovsky than I ordinarily would.
You know, I don't mind saying, okay, game theory, everyone's going to who, I'll play Amadovsky. Because frankly, it's a coin flip. Joe.
So I heard Amadovsky was actually gifted his UFC contract. His regional record is horrid. I mean, he beat a guy that was 1-13. Saying you like Hu, I laugh because I think of an owl. Saying you like Hu is
it's on first.
It's all odds. It's all odds value, right? Because neither one of these guys, like the combined time since these guys have been in the octagon is like over 5 years, like combined. And Hu, as we know, made Cyril Asker look like a stud. Fought as high as heavyweight, second fight at light heavyweight, and now he's down at what would appear to be his natural weight, which is his middleweight. So what
you're all banking on here, UFC plan.
Yeah. So what you're actually banking on here is you're banking on Hu is improved more during the layoff and looking at camps, you know, and looking at like, does someone know something? Is that why the money's coming in? Apparently, Hu spent some time at Jackson Wink. He spent some time at Tiger Muay Thai. He spent some time at the PI in Shanghai.
Wait, Hu did?
Hu. Who's on? You know. So I'm gonna go with Hu for that reason. Like, I'm gonna assume that there's someone out there that perhaps knows something that steamed this line down to +110, and that DraftKings just got it wrong. It is a high-risk play, guys. Come on. I mean, like, who could come out and just snark this guy? But, I mean, just be prepared. If you're banking on Hu, you're playing him for line value. You're playing him because someone perhaps knows something. But that's the only reason you're playing. Like, unless you've actually watched this guy train and have been at his camps and kind of know how to speak Mandarin, then, okay, great. But otherwise, it's a dart throw. And you're going with the guy who you think has developed more over the course of their absence. That's it.
I just want to point out that Joe went way longer on that than I did. So.
I know. You're right. But well, I think it because it's the line value is going to make him such highly owned.
Yeah.
I think there was some worthwhile narrative there.
Whereas we go from that fight to a fight that I don't really want much to do with for DFS. But and it's one between two guys who can't win in the UFC. Zhlagos Zhumagulov, 9,300 on DK, $22 on FanDuel. Jerome Rivera, 6,900 on DK, $8 on FanDuel. I think Zhlagos is better everywhere. I'm just worried about the scoring. He's my pick, not a fight I'm heavily invested in. Joe.
Yeah. do I really care? Yeah, I guess I'll go the same way. Neither one of, you know, again, this is something where you really haven't seen anything. You know, by either guy here. I guess I'll go with the person who can maybe get a few takedowns, although there are some people out there, Clint from Die Hard MMA, who, you know, is backing Rivera. You know, he's going to have a pretty significant height advantage. However, he's never really fought at range before. He is younger. You should probably have a few shares of him just because anybody who lays 3-1, you don't want a guy that's coming off of two losses. You know, I'm going to say it, James Tahuna. You know, so I would, okay, I'll go with the favorite, but it's not a ringing endorsement. These first two fights are pretty garbage fights for a big-time card.
It's been a while since I heard James Tahuna effect.
Yeah.
Chris, you got?
I think Zhumagulov could definitely get his takedowns here, so maybe that makes him a cash play. I mean, Figueiredo's brother took down – Rivera a lot, and Jumagulov shoots a lot, especially in the first fight. I think he shot 12 times. I kind of like Rivera. He's got a good kicking game that got him sent to hell by Tyson Nam, a counter shot by Tyson Nam. Jumagulov doesn't have that kind of power, so I wouldn't worry about that. I don't mind taking a shot on him. I don't really know what he's going to do. So, yeah, this is kind of a fade. Again, I don't mind some shots on Rivera or Jumagulov as a cash play, but otherwise I would say, you know, tuck in for the rest of the card because there are some good ones coming down the pike here.
Yeah, last point on this fight is there is a truck race going off in 45 minutes in NASCAR. I have more interest in that than I do in this fight.
Omari Akhmedov, he's the underdog, 7,600, $10 on FanDuel, taking on Brad Tavares, 8,600, $20 on FanDuel. And this fight, I mean, it's pretty simple. Can Akhmedov get takedowns? Tavares, historically great takedown defense. I still want the dog here. I'm a little worried about my stance in this one. There's other people I want instead of Tavares. And I can see Akhmedov gassing and Tavares getting a late finish and really screwing up this slate for me. But Akhmedov, the upside is there, especially on DraftKings. FanDuel, even though he's cheaper, the FanDuel draft, I mean, if you're unfamiliar, grappling just it's irrelevant. It's all about finishes, finishes, finishes. So I'm interested in Akhmedov on DK, and Tavares doesn't make the cut with a lot of the options we're going to talk about later. So this is a dangerous spot for me, but I'm on the Akhmedov side. Chris, who you got?
Well, I would say for FanDuel, Tavares gets a little more steam because they count. I get it, but they count the takedowns defended. So you know, four or five of those, you could get, and the late finish could develop into something. I think the fight's going to play out exactly how your worst nightmare is there, Sean. I think that Akhmedov isn't going to get the takedowns. He's going to gas out. We just saw Brad Tavares stuff 11 to 12 from Carlos Jr. Now, Akhmedov is a stronger, probably a better wrestler than Carlos Jr., but he's still not great with his takedown accuracy. And, I don't think he's going to have to stuff a lot of shots before Akhmedov realized. I mean, the reason why he stopped wrestling and he's gotten back to it recently is that it was tiring him out. We've seen him go back to it. We saw how tired he got in the Chris Weidman fight. I mean, they both did, but I mean, he especially, and allowed Weidman to get that win. And I just think that Tavares is going to be able to stay on his feet long enough. Akhmedov still throws hammers, so you have to worry about that too. But I think that Tavares is the play here. I think he's sneaky to get a big score here. And like I said, especially FanDuel, but I wouldn't discount the late finish. I see it as a real possibility.
Joe.
So I like Tavares on DraftKings. Well, I like Tavares more as a bet than I do for DraftKings. I also think that this would be a great fight to live bet because you have Akhmedov, who's probably going to win the first round, because he goes out gangbusters. And I do agree with Chris that I think Tavares is much more viable on FanDuel. I mean, you know, I don't know what he would have scored defending 11 to 12 takedowns. I don't play FanDuel, so I can't give you any color on that. But, I mean, defending 11 out of 12 takedowns is probably going to result in a pretty decent pickup. I do like him as a bet. I have bet him. But also I'm going to look to see if Akhmedov does win the first round, just due to activity, what the live bet is after round one. And then maybe there'd be time to put a little bit more on Tavares. Look, I think Akhmedov has a decent floor, and if he ever could carry his cardio over three rounds and maybe does land a few takedowns, I could see him winning kind of a greasy decision. Let's hope not, because I am on Tavares here. I just don't think he's a great play for DraftKings.
All right, next fight up, let's talk about – oh, God, we got to get to some good fights. You know, it's funny. Most of the good fights for DFS are actually on the main card, which is interesting.
Yeah, so why do you think, Sean, people are saying that this is a good card? Like, I looked at this card, and I'm like, this is a typical Conor McGregor card, right? You've got the main event. You've got a couple other mildly interesting fights, but like, a lot of shit. Like, I don't know why people are like, maybe because we had a week off, But yeah, like, I don't really see this as a great card.
You know what? You know what? I think the top half of the card is good. Honestly, after this next fight we're going to talk about, I'm down. Now I'm going to get a little ahead of ourselves. I'm down for Duplessis, Trevin Giles. It's a solid prelim. I like watching Ryan Hall fight. I like the tilt he puts MMA Twitter on, and I like that he's different. Nico Price, fun as hell.
Sean
O'Malley. I mean, he's fighting a can now, but okay. Griffin Condit's interesting. I don't mind the women's fight. Like, I think after this, you got Tuivasa Hardy. Like, honestly, you got Wonder Boy back. I think it's a good card. I don't think it's great. I think it's a good card, but it's good because the first four fights are horrible.
Would you admit that? Would you say that it would have been a very good card if we got Brady Lee? I think that would have made it a really good card.
Just your early prelim. Just our early prelims, usually, oh, there's going to be fireworks. The early prelims, shit.
Yeah.
Early
prelims, well, to be fair, there should be, I mean, they're bad fireworks, but they should be fireworks in the Who fight. I mean, somebody's going to just drop.
I keep thinking of Dr. Seuss whenever you say Who. Dr. Who. Seuss. Who.
All right, let's
Mary Lou Who.
I know we're trying to avoid it. We have to talk about Jennifer Maia. At $8,820 on FanDuel, taking on Jessica Ai at $7,409. My quick analysis: I think Maia wins. I think Ai, for the price, I'll take a couple shots. Like, I'm not paying that price for Jennifer Maia. If she knocks out Jessica Ai, shit. Like, that just that's the analysis here. Maia wins. I'll take a couple shots on Ai. Joe.
Yeah. So what you said makes perfect sense for DraftKings, but here is where I'm a little perplexed. Okay, does the fact that you don't like the betting line on Jennifer Maia mean that you should bet Jessica Ai? Like, I'm old school. I just don't get the logic.
But I do like the line on Maia.
Well, see, yeah, and here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. Like, let's arguably say that the line is a little high on Maia, or, you know, some people think it's more than a little high. Is that enough? Like, I think Maya's better everywhere. She's better standing. She's got more hand speed. She's better on the mat. Like, I don't think there's one place where Jessica Ai is better. She's maybe fought better competition. People are playing up the narrative. They're looking for regression because she took a round off of Val, and everybody's saying that's what's steaming the lineup. But, like, okay, but do you think Jessica Ai is going to win? Like, to me, it shouldn't matter what the line is. Do you think the fighter is going to win? I agree it's not a great fight for DraftKings unless Maia can get the finish, which, you know, look, stranger things have happened. I've seen some regression in Jessica Ai. Give me Maia here. I think Maia is a better bet than I do as a DraftKings play. I don't really plan on having much of Jessica Ai in DraftKings, but I'll take Maia for the win.
Chris?
Yeah, two boxers, and one is the much better boxer, that being Jennifer Maia. I think that we could see Ai try to use her physicality as she tried to do in the Calderwood fight, but Maia is really strong. She took down Val, held her down for 7 minutes. The line is kind of high, but as I recommended it in my best bets article, plug. If you take it by decision, it turns into dog money, slight. I think it was plus 110, I think, which I think is the most probable way she wins anyway. I mean, Jessica Ai is very tough. I think she's only been stopped twice in her career overall, only once by strikes. So I wouldn't go betting on that. I think that Maia wins. I think that this is probably a fight you can just leave. This is like a 73-74 pointer for Maia on DraftKings or something, and that doesn't get it done. So I'm gonna probably skip this one, and we're gonna sink our teeth into the meat of the card here coming up.
All right, Dricus Duplessis, $8,215, taking on Trevin Giles at $8,015. It's funny. This is another one, kind of like the last one. DFS can simplify these breakdowns. We can go back and forth about who's going to win the fight, et cetera, et cetera. If Trevin Giles wins, I don't think it scores well. If Duplessis wins, I think he probably gets a knockout. So who do I want to play? I'll play Duplessis, and if I'm wrong, you know, I don't think Trevin Giles is going to break the slate. If he does, I'm in trouble. But, like, it's a coin flip fight. I agree with the odds. But one guy is much more likely to do something big for DFS. So that's who I'm going to play. That's who I'm going to pick just because I'm a DFS player. Is it a close fight? Yes. I also do think Duplessis is just a little bit better of a striker at range. So that's, I guess, my analysis scores. Chris, what you got?
So I don't really get the Trevin Giles hit. I know that he hasn't scored well all the time, but you got to remember, like the that fight that he got knocked out against Zach Cummings. He was winning most of it. He always decides to grapple.
You said the part I have a problem with. He got knocked out by Zach Cummings.
Sure, but we're gonna talk about Ryan Hall coming up, and we all saw that interview where he talked about sample size and. Specifically, that just because one outcome happens one time doesn't mean that it's going to happen. And that's a perfect example, right? If we rack that, who are you going to pick to win? I'm picking Trevin Giles. I think you are too, unless
maybe.
I'm wrong.
I mean, here's the other thing. His best win was his last win. As unproven as Duplessis is, I don't get a lot from Trevin Giles' UFC career. James Bochnevich, Braga Neto, all right, knocked out by Cummings, finished by Mearshart. The James Krause fight, he lost that fight.
No doubt he lost that fight. I have no doubt.
Get out of here. He lost by a lot.
That was one of the worst decisions of the year.
I don't have it open, but wasn't the Bevin Lewis a decent score?
I will go pull up the scores. I don't have the scores open in front of me. I'll go. Well, yeah, the third round finish was probably decent.
I think there was two knockdowns in there. I think there was.
I don't think he's gonna finish Duplessis. I don't think. I mean, hang on. Let's look.
Well, all right. Well, while you're looking, let me get
to. I got it right here. Hang on.
Okay. All right.
Let's hold your horses because I'm gonna die on this hill. I don't think Giles is a good DFS play. In that fight, he scored. Man. DraftKings and your windows, you suck. Trevin Giles scored 92.
Yeah, so that works.
It took him two knockdowns to get there.
Well, but he scored two knockdowns.
The most strikes he's ever landed in a fight was 70.
That's the thing, and I think that's the major criticism of him, as far as I'm concerned, is that he can work a little slow sometimes. But, I mean, what did you really see from Duplessis, aside from, you know, the shot that he landed behind the ear that really makes you say that you like him in that Marcus Perez fight? He does what he always does, which is he backs himself up, and then he storms in with strikes. If he does that against Giles, he's going to be in trouble because Giles is very good in and out. He's very good with range. I could see him getting really smacked by a counter shot here. And look, Giles likes to grapple even in fights where he shouldn't. You referenced the Mearshart fight. If he does so here, I think it's going to be good for him. I know that Duplessis likes to wrestle too. I would bet on Giles being the better grappler. You know, he hung with Mearshart a lot in that fight. He got reversals on James Krause, who is a good black belt. I just think he's got a good skill set. He's a good boxer. He's athletic. He's got some power. And I haven't seen a lot from Duplessis that I like. I know he's got power. I know he wrestles a little bit. You can say that the Marcus Perez performance was octagon jitters or whatever, even though he did outland him in that fight. I don't think he looked particularly good up until the elbow landed. And I think Giles could surprise. I think maybe there's a hot take coming. We'll save that for later. But I'm taking Trevin Giles here, and I actually like that salary. I think it's a little sneaky.
Joe.
Okay, so I like Trevin Giles as well here. I don't know how much I like him on DraftKings. My issue with the South African fighter is he was actually submitted by Gareth McClellan, who might be the worst fighter in
long
the
time
UFC.
Ago.
Now,
long
yeah, so time. It was 7 years ago. Yeah, I will say that. You know, has spent pretty much all his time in the South African promotion and KSW. KSW is decent. You know, Marcus Perez, yeah, he caught him. He was a minus 205 favorite in that fight. I think this is going to be a more difficult fight. I like Trevin Giles, but I also see Sean's point where if, you know, the South African fighter is going to get, you know, he's going to win by finish in all likelihood if he does win, which makes him kind of DraftKings viable. Now, I think the line should be reversed. So I think there's negative line value in Duplessis. So I don't know how much I'm going to have of him. Maybe I'll have a few shares. But like, I do like Giles to win the fight. You know, at his salary, he doesn't really need to do much. Like if we take the 90 something points that Chris referenced, I would take that with Giles. The one other thing, for those that don't know, Giles is not a full-time fighter. He's a full-time police officer. Thank you for your service. So he, you know, look, I don't know how that affects his training, but whenever you're working full-time 12-hour shifts, you know, you're not training. I don't believe Duplessis has that issue, but just kind of keep that in the back of your head. But give me Trevin Giles.
Ryan Hall, he's a dog, 7,109 bucks. Ilia Topuria, 9,122. If you believe Topuria and that he could start this fight in 50-50, then I have a bridge to sell you. It'd be great. Or if he is that stupid, please do it. And I will roster all the Ryan Hall in the world. Look, Ryan Hall is a guy, I have to admit, I am a fan of his. Because he makes people angry, which amuses me to no end. He's different. And he's got that interesting leg lock game, which I'm, you know, I'm a BJJ fan. So I like that type of thing. He also, his DFS, he tends to make fights suck for DFS for the favorites, the guys facing him. Topuria's going to have a hard time scoring big, in my opinion, unless he finds a quick knockout. Is it possible? Sure. People love to hate Ryan Hall so much. I think I'm going to get leverage on Topuria by going underweight. I think Topuria is going to be relatively popular on this card. He has got a good inside-the-distance prop for it. I'm going to roster some of them because he could get a finish. Ryan Hall, to me, is a live dog because he's interesting. He makes fights unconventional and close where he can get a sneaky decision. And we've had a couple low-scoring cards where if he's the only dog who wins or one of two at 7,100, he could end up on the optimal. God forbid he finds a leg lock in the first round because he's getting Eminari roll everywhere the whole fight. So I'm taking Hall. Is it a confident pick? Not really. It's more I'm getting some leverage on Topuria and Hall at least making it. If he doesn't win, making Topuria score like ass. So it is one of those spots I'm taking risk on the card. I'm on the Hall side. Joe.
Yeah. Interesting fight, right? You know, I'm kind of with you on Hall. I definitely value intelligence. You know, like Hall is coming off of, you know, a number of wins. You know, Ilya is, what, 24 years old, 10 wins. Prior to coming to the UFC, he had six finishes, a knockout, and then five submissions. I really do hope that he tries to grapple with Ryan Hall. I think that could make the fight interesting. And to your point, at least I think this is your point, if he does win, Ilya, I don't think he's going to score well. You know, because I don't necessarily see him finishing Hall. I see Hall being tricky enough and frustrating enough to, you know, to Ilya that he doesn't score well. Now, if you go back and watch the Zalal fight, you know, Zalal actually had some reversals against Ilya. So I don't think Ilya's in the same league as Ryan Hall when it comes to grappling, especially submission grappling. You know, even though he's got a pretty impressive resume in the minor leagues, you know, Hall has been in the majors for a while. The whole my grappling coach beat your grappling coach, so that means I can beat you is kind of juvenile. But, you know, whatever he needs to, you know, get him to bed at night. I will have a few shares just in case, because you do have him coming off of, you know, some pretty decent scores. You know, Brett Apley, in his, Mayo Media Network, you know, giving you a dog, a tournament play and a cash play, you know, his dog is Ryan Hall. You know, I'm going to actually have some shots with Ryan Hall at 7.1K, but I will... I'll pick the dog here. I mean, I don't know that it matters, but I'll pick the dog. I think he's got a shot to win. I think the salary range is pretty wide, but I'll take Ryan Hall.
Chris.
Well, now I have to ruin your day, Sean.
Go for it.
I was contemplating not doing it, but now that you're both there. I just think, and it's funny because I was going to reference exactly what Joe did. I was going to reference it in relation to, because he said, like you said, Sean, I'll be good in the leg locks. He actually called Zalal's jiu-jitsu white belt stuff and then got swept three times.
I know.
So I don't know that we can take his word for all that much. But and I also agree with Joe that I want to see somebody challenge Ryan Hall on the ground. It's like Mackenzie Dern. We didn't think anybody could beat her until Viviana Araújo tried and beat her on the ground and won that fight. I think it will be very interesting. I do think that this fight has a chance to score better because I think whether you want to call it delusional confidence or not, and I think it probably is, I think that Topuria isn't going to be afraid to engage with Ryan Hall as most of his other opponents are because they're constantly in fear of that rolling leg lock. So if he's not afraid to engage, that's going to lead to a lot more exciting, or at least a potential for a lot more exciting fight. I don't think that the picks on Topuria is hatred of Ryan Hall per se. I just think it's that people think that, oh, if you get to him, if you hit him clean, since he can't strike, you're going to knock him out. But he's proven to be very hard to hit cleanly. Topuria, I'm really interested to see it because as he is a grappler by trade, the first thing I ever saw at Topuria was him in the minors there really pressuring somebody and knocking him out. So he has a really good pressure striking game that he can go to, and I'm curious to see if he employs it here. I think that Ryan Hall, eventually he's going to hit a ceiling here because I don't think that just the sort of, janky movements and Imanari rolls are going to do it. But you also have to remember that those Imanari rolls are not takedowns. You can kind of argue that they should be. I mean, you're rolling and getting the guy to the ground, but they're not takedowns. So if this fight gets out of the first round, the best he can likely do is a cash score. I don't think he's going to knock him down twice as he did. Who was that? Gray Maynard that he knocked down twice? That was fun. I doubt he's ever going to do that again.
Darren Elkins,
was it Darren? Oh, yeah, Darren Elkins. That's right. Maynard was the guy who wouldn't engage at all. So I'm going to go to Poirier here. I think he can get a finish. I do think that the fight can stall out, but I think there's going to be fireworks here because I think Topuria is going to try to engage, and that should lead to some higher scores.
All right, let's talk about a real fun fight. Michelle Pereira, $8,919, taking on Nico Price at $7,314. Look, I don't care if you shock. Nico Price is my favorite underdog on the card because he's a dog who's going to fight for your money. His fights generate points upon points upon points. And just that pressure style can win him. A decision gets him there. A finish gets him there. I love this fight overall, though. I will say I'm going to be 80 to 90% on this fight because whatever I don't have in Nico Price, I want Michelle Pereira. So while Price is, probably is my favorite dog on the card, Pereira is one of my favorite payups as well. I just love this fight. It's just what Nico Price brings to DFS. I can't wait for it. Like, I am at this point such a fan of Nico Price. This should be this isn't on the main card. This, to me, I would put ahead of O'Malley. I'd put it ahead of Ty and Greg Hardy. I wouldn't put it as the co-main event, but to me, this is the third best fight on the card. I'm really looking forward to Nico Price and Michelle Pereira. So DFS-wise, just play it all. And if you want it, the cash game side, you could play Price because he's cheap. That's really it, though. You just know his floor is two. It's there. So, Chris, your fight.
Yeah, totally fun fight. I think we need to mention that although Pereira does have a lot of losses in the regionals, they're mostly decisions. Only been knocked out one time. So I think that can come into play. I also like the fact that Pereira is going to be the more athletic and the bigger fighter. He's very big for this weight class. I think that can mean that he'll try to wrestle and go for takedowns. He's gotten two takedowns in three of his five fights, which is interesting because you would think of him as just this like guy who wants to come in and strike, but he does throw his weight around and wrestle as well. Either one of these guys can drop. I don't trust Nico Price. I actually think that Pereira has been a smarter fighter. I think he's shown that recently. I think he's showing some evolution. And I just think he's got more weapons here. So I'm going to pick him. You got to have shares of both. I think that Price is going to be more popular just because he's cheaper and this fight's going to end inside the distance. But that should be all the more reason, I think, if you like Pereira, and I do. So that's the pick.
Yeah, so Price, GPP only, because as Sean said, his floor is fairly low. Although, you know, Pereira has not really scored well, you know, in DraftKings. I don't think he's got a 100-point performance, and he's priced fairly up there. So I definitely see Price as a better value. There's some line value there as well. So I'm going to actually pick Nico Price. I mean, anybody who's got enough power to knock you out off his back could probably put away Pereira. Although it is a very risky fight. It's a GPP-only fight. I think Nico Price is going to be higher owned than Pereira. So if you want to look at it from that perspective, maybe you could get some leverage by being underweight to Price and overweight to Pereira. I also heard that Price had a good camp. He got really focused. He's kind of going to be a bit more measured, you know, not play into the antics that, you know, Pereira has used in the past. So give me Nico Price here. But again, GPPs only.
All right, next fight up, Max Payne Griffin, 8,700, taking on Carlos Condit, 7,500. Griffin's 21 on FanDuel. Condit is 10. I like Max Griffin. The price on FanDuel is... No thanks, especially when everyone Twitter's going nuts. Please shoot a takedown, Max. Please shoot a takedown. And for the love of God, please shoot a takedown. Max Griffin should win this fight unless he goes full stupid on us. That's just the way it is. I'm sorry, age is a thing in MMA. He's got a clear path to victory. And on the feet, it's close. I don't think Condon will totally smoke him. Like, Griffin's a tough guy. He can be in wars, but there's such a clear path to victory. Griffin's the pick. Has some decent upside and just... Condit's live because I don't trust Griffin to not shoot a takedown. I really don't. So Griffin is still the pick, though. Joe.
So on the flight over, the JetBlue flight attendant actually took Condit down, helping him to his seat. You know, he's got the worst takedown defense in the history of the UFC. I think he's been taken down more than any fighter in the UFC. Yeah, Griffin has got to wrestle here. I mean, we know he can do it. I don't want a repeat of the Alex Moreno performance where he decided, oh, let me wrestle in the third round and take him down four times. Hopefully, and again, I have to look. I'm not sure where Griffin does his camp. I should be better prepared. But I would hope that his coaches, I mean, this is not a secret. I mean, everybody knows what the game plan is against Carlos Condit. And by the way, you know, like, I'm not making as much of the age because – Griffin is 35, Condit is 37, but there's a lot more mileage on Carlos Condit than there is on you know, Max Payne Griffin. So, you know, it's not the age thing. It's more like, you know, what has Condit really done? I mean, he barely outstruck Court McGee. And for some reason, McGee didn't try to get the fight. I mean, I almost think that fight, and I won't use the F word by Fix, it just seemed really weird to me, the way that whole fight was set up. I mean, you know, you've got a guy that has had 45 fights in the UFC alone. I'm sorry, 45 fights total, not in the UFC. You know, yeah, he's coming off of two wins, but Jake Ellenberger, well, actually, that was a grappling bout. Matt Brown and Court McGee? I mean, you know, come on. So I really like Griffin here. I really hope that Griffin's camp will, you know, lay out the game plan, like take him down, hold him down, do what you can, box him up, wear him out. You know, that's what you got to do. That's what's going to win you the fight. I like Griffin here a fair amount. I think he's got some grappling upside on DraftKings, and I also like him as a wager.
Chris?
Yeah, I like Griffin too. I mean, I don't know if Condit beating Court McGee is a fix. I mean, it's not like Court McGee wrestles all the time. But, you know, be that as it may, I think that I mean, the reason why Condit, I think, doesn't care about takedown defense is he always feels like his guard can get the job done. He does have a tricky one, but Max Griffin has never been submitted in his career, and that's a long career. He's older than you might think. He's 35 at this point. He's, I think, 25 fight veteran. Never been submitted. So, and I agree with Sean. I think Griffin is pretty good on the feet. He's got some good footwork. He was stung by Alves there, and that's a fight I think he won anyway. I think that he should wrestle. We've seen him carry a wrestling game plan better than he did in that Moreno fight. I think maybe he just thought, I have the speed advantage here. I'm going to be able to overtake him. Didn't work out like that. I think that he's going to be more conscientious about that here. I'm taking Griffin. I'm still going to be rooting for Condit, and I'm going to have some shares of Condit just because, it's weird to me that he doesn't have a knockout since he come back. I mean, I know he knocked down Court McGee, but he still looks pretty dangerous to me when he's on his feet. And so I think that I'll have some shares of Condit for that reason. But yeah, I think the play is Griffin, and it works best on DraftKings for the wrestling upside.
Sean O'Malley, 9,500, 23 on FanDuel. Chris Moutinho, 67 on DK, 8 on FanDuel. Look, in cash games on FanDuel, he is your MVP. Done. Next spot. On DraftKings, we can argue about this if you want, but 99% of lineups are going to be Stack and Sean O'Malley. And now you have three fighters to pick. Look, I like what I've heard from Moutinho at pressers. Good on him. He's got his shot here. And if anybody's gonna fold as a huge dog, as a huge favorite, roll his ankle or something, it's Sean O'Malley. But skill wise, as much as I'm over the O'Malley shtick, I we've seen Connor look forced. O'Malley's whole thing looks forced. Like I'm just. That kind of shtick just doesn't do it for me anymore. So I'm not a fan of his. Just not. Is he a good fighter? Sure. I want to see him against more grapplers, but they'll never do that till they have to. O'Malley should knock this guy out in the first round. If he doesn't, he may not pay off. I'm going to eat the chalk. It's a little scary, though, because he could roll an ankle. But O'Malley's the pick here and just kind of move on with it. Chris.
So I agree. I probably won't eat too much chalk here just because, it's hard to predict a first-round knockout of anybody, really, especially if you're not at heavyweight. It's not something that I'm going to bank on. Interesting note that Moutinho's last opponent was from Freehold, New Jersey, which is where I live. So that's interesting. I've never heard of that guy.
I'm pretty sure
it was not me. I would have performed, I think, measurably worse, but I don't know who that is, but maybe I'm an instant fan, and I hope we see him in the UFC pretty soon. But I do think Sean O'Malley has all the advantages here. The thing that's interesting is Moutinho is a kicker, and that's what we have seen Sean O'Malley fold to. Is look, he can say that he just rolled his ankle all he wants, but that Chito Vera fight. He got hit with a kick first, and I don't exactly remember what happened in the Sukumtav fight, so I can't speak to that. But I don't remember if Sukumtav was kicking his leg or not. But I think that's the analysis of the fight. I think Sean O'Malley first round stoppage by strikes is or just for first round stoppage is slightly plus money, so that would be the way to go. If you want to do that, I think that
I think he's like minus 200. I thought
for a first round stop.
Let me look.
Whatever, minus 200 for a first round stop. No, can't be.
Oh, O'Malley by TKO was minus 245.
Right,
O'Malley. You're right. O'Malley round 1, 115.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's the way to go. I think that's the way to go there. As I said, I probably won't eat too much of it just because. You need it, I just want more flexibility in my lineups. I'd rather have it. But, I mean, the flip side of that is that I think the 60-second bonus is live. You can never play for that. But, I mean, it is something to consider. So, I mean, this is way too long. The play is O'Malley, and we'll see if he decides to screw the pooch on this one somehow.
Yeah, so I'm going to repeat some of the same stuff I said on the Alpha Pod, if you guys watch that. I think that if Sean O'Malley and Connor or Dustin are, you know, in your lineup, in all likelihood, if you're playing mass entry, you're going to tie with a lot of people, unless you get really uniquely different. You know, the other thing is, in the last two UFC slates, we had short notice replacements coming in to take on 9K plus fighters, and the 9K plus fighters both got sparked, and I was left in the rain with not even an urban sombrero. And it really hurt. So I will have, I'm not going to tell you I'm going to be like way over market to, you know, the challenger here, but I will have a few shares in my 20 entry, which I would never do in the past with guys like this, simply because if that happens again, I don't want to be kind of held short. Sean O'Malley himself predicted a second round knockout. So now, again, I don't know what that means, but a second round knockout is likely not going to mean optimal. Could be, depends on how, you know, how he lights him up in the first round, how many strikes he lands. You know, I have a feeling this is going to be a relatively low scoring slate, but be careful. Like, I know that there are people out there that are going to hit enter and play him in all 150 lineups in a mass entry. I really think that unless you get different in a lot of those lineups, even if he is optimal, which again, I think there's a chance he might not be, you're going to be sharing with a lot of people, which, okay, fine. You know, if that's what floats your boat, I want, you know, more. so I'll probably be slight. I'm going to play him in cash, but I'll probably be slightly under in GPPs. With O'Malley, I am obviously picking him to win. But to Sean's point, you know, you got a guy that, you know, all his opponent needed to do was make him stand up and he would have had a loss. Got his legs chopped out and lost, you know, like, so who knows what happens here?
We lost Sean. I don't know where he went. So I will take over the
hosting duties.
Hosting duties for the time being as I vamp while I get everything up. I thought I had half a day off, but this is what happens. Sometimes your number gets called and you have to do it. So I'm just gonna go DraftKings just because it's the only thing I have open. Hopefully Sean gets back and he can do his more professional thing. But right now we have Irene Aldana 8,300 versus Yana Kunitskaya at 7,900. And again, this is only DraftKings pricing. Me personally, I'm going Kunitskaya here. I know Aldana missed by 4 pounds. I tend to think that is very much intentional. Like, I don't think she came into this camp thinking I'm going to miss weight, but I think maybe as it got harder, she'll say, you know, I have to deal with the physicality anyway. Maybe I'll just take the 20% hit and be a little bit more prepared in there. Because that's what I think Kunitskaya is going to have to do, is sort of grapple and, you know, sort of get this fight where she can use her physicality. I do think Kunitskaya is a decent kickboxer, and that can be a dynamic that will work against Aldana, who's more of a pure boxer. So I like that aspect of it as well. But I think this is mainly dog or pass just because I don't trust Aldana to land the heater that knocked out who was the big knockout?
Oh yeah, yeah. Let's see.
I think I heard Sean come back. Sean, save me from myself. Here he is.
This is a disaster. My computer is all jammed up. So I'm on my phone.
Wow.
Chris, I would appreciate after I intro this next fight, you Todd will do a solo real quick so I can charge this.
Okay. Yeah. No problem. I already introed Aldana Kunitskaya, so we're doing that now, and I'm just finishing it up. And I'll finish by saying that Kunitskaya is my play here. I don't think another knockout is in the cards for Aldana. And I think that the control time, maybe some takedowns can go a little bit further for the 7,900. So give me Kunitskaya.
Yeah, so I'm actually with you here, Chris. It was Caitlin Vieira who Aldana KO'd. I always thought that Aldana was pretty massive for 135. I mean, if you've seen her, like, she definitely hydrates up. I mean, she has got thighs that could, you know, like, just crush a boa constrictor. So I wanted to think the same thing you did about the weight miss, where, you know, it, you know, because generally when you have fighters who miss weight, right, you don't want them missing by a quarter pound or a half pound, right? Because that means they legitimately tried and failed. You want a fighter who misses bad because, you know, you're giving up the same percentage of your purse. However, she really didn't look that good on the scale for whatever that's worth. Kunitskaya, I actually like her not only as a wager, I like her on DraftKings as well. I mean, she's put up, like, shockingly, some really decent scores in some of her fights. And, I mean, look, she did not exactly have the easiest entree, you know, into the UFC, having to fight, you know, Cyborg on short notice. So I like Kunitskaya here. The last I saw, I think it was she was even or plus 100. I definitely think, you know, she could be a surprising play on DK. I don't know what her ownership is going to look like, but, you know, I think if you look at her last two fights, 92 points, 109 points, like, sign me up at 7.9K for that. 40 points in a loss to Aspen Ladd, then 82 points against Renault and 119 against Landsberg. I mean, obviously, we're not going to look at what she scored against Cyborg. That doesn't matter. But she landed on 215 strikes in her last fight and had 5 minutes and 9 seconds of control time. And she was 6.9K. So I, you know, look, I think she's got some good training partners. We all know her story about being married to Santos, right? Santos or, sorry.
Yeah,
Santos. She's married to Santos. I really think, like, this is a sneaky little play at 7.9K. And, you know, if you just put up the average of her last four fights, including the loss, I'll take that at 7.9K. And I bet her as well because I kind of like her as a bet. I think Aldana should probably move up to 145. I know it's a kind of a dead weight class, but maybe she'll get a title fight someday at that weight. But give me Kunitskaya here.
Yeah, I'm going to circle back because I'm on the Aldana side. Look, I think she's good enough to keep Kunitskaya, use some of that size to keep space and in range. I think the boxing is going to pay dividends here against Kunitskaya. I'm a little I feel actually I'm considering betting Aldana, which is not odd me to go directly against it. I just think her size keeps her alive in the clinch and she's the better striker. But DraftKings is a slightly different story because I don't see her finishing her, putting up any kind of crazy volume. So I can get on board with Kunitskaya if she wins. There's control time. There's a takedown. Could be the better DK play. I can get on board with that. But I like Aldana as the pick here, and I like her because I don't think she's going to be highly owned. I think, what, between 10 and 15%, maybe? So I think she's one of the sneakier options. I'll probably play her like 20% just to get a little bit of leverage and be a little bit different. Because I do think she's able to keep space in this one. If she's not, Kunitskaya wins, but I'm on the Aldana side.
By the way, you know, they have identical reach, Aldana and Kunitskaya, 68.5. Yes, Aldana is 3 inches taller than her, but the reach is exactly the same.
Interesting. I think she'll be able to use some of her size. She's big. She's a bigger fighter, isn't she?
Well, she'll probably be bigger at fight time for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
We already know she missed by 4 pounds. So,
I think that size is going to pay off. It's going to pay off in the clinch. Anyway, Tai Tuivasa, $8,417. Greg Hardy, $7,812. Look, I'm consistently going to pick against guys who MMA is new to them. It's still that to Greg Hardy. I know Ty's got his flaws, but $8,400 for Tai Tuivasa, please knock out the woman beater. Please. Please, 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 please. I also don't think Hardy's really going to finish him. I think Hardy's going to go over Owen because of the name value. He's a better FanDuel play where he's all the way down to $12 versus in the mid-range here on DraftKings. So I can get on board with him more there. Maybe Tuivasa gasses out, but Hardy doesn't have a great gas tank. So, you know, I'm on the tie side. It's probably one of my stronger takes in the card. I am worried that if Tuivasa doesn't get a first-round finish, this turns into a slog that doesn't score well. So while they're big guys, it's not an all-in fight for that reason. But I am on the tie side. Chris, and please go to the solo view.
Yeah, I would think, you know, if I'm worried about a gas tank, I think it would be Hardy's. We've seen Tuivasa in third rounds before. No inhaler required, so that's always a plus. And look, Hardy is sort of like we say this sometimes where a guy is will have a couple fights and we say, well, we really don't know how good he is. This is going to be Hardy's ninth fight in the UFC, and I would say we still don't know how good he is. If you here's a fun fact. Literally nobody he's ever beaten in the organization is still here because Maurice Greene just got cut. Everybody's gone. And Maurice Greene is his best win in the octagon, and Maurice Greene is currently 9-6. So when you look at him, I'm not saying he has shown no competency. He actually shows some pretty decent pull counters in the first round like he did against Marcin Tybura, but I've been on this train for a while where I don't necessarily think he's that big of a puncher for heavyweight. I think it's sort of a Brock Lesnar situation where, you know, he's big and muscular and bricked up, but, you know, just maybe the punching mechanics or whatever it is. I know he's got a lot of finishes, but a lot of that is, you know, Dmitry Smolyakov and Juan Adams and whatnot. So, I mean, he hit Marcin Tybura in the face four times in a row, and Tybura just sort of walked through it. I think he tends to short arm a lot of his punches. I think maybe they're going for more speed than power at this point, and maybe that's it. And we know that Tai Tuivasa is really tough. He took a shot in that first minute against Hunsucker and he didn't even like flinch. It was bizarre. But he's very tough. Junior Dos Santos knocked him down. That was more of an accumulation in the second round, finished him. And he was a wild man in that fight. He was punching from his back, so he wasn't like – he's just kind of dumb. He wasn't like wobbled. But I think that this is going to be interesting because we're going to see – maybe for the first time, we're going to see somebody try and put Greg Hardy on his back foot. And we're going to have to see how he reacts. And I think that as long as Tuivasa can fade what might be a decent first round if he has to, I think – Greg Hardy will be so tired by the time the second round comes and Tuivasa pushing him that he's going to get a finish here. So my pick is Tuivasa.
Yeah, I'm with you. Some interesting points here. One is you unfortunately probably have to have some of this fight because it's minus 200 to finish inside the distance. Also, DraftKings Sportsbook has three odds boosts out for this slate. Two of them directly have Tai Tuivasa in the odds boost. Aljamain Sterling apparently picks him to win, and so does Brendan Schaub. And then okay, John Anik.
Now I'm all – who's Schaub picking?
He's picking Tuivasa.
Oh, no.
And then John Anik has this fight going under 2.5 rounds. So, look, I think Hardy is the one more likely to give up if he gets stung. You know, Tuivasa, you know, he's this crazy – Aussie, you know, he trains with Mark Hunt. They beat the crap out of each other. I like Tuivasa here. I mean, again, I do think you should have a share or two of Hardy in case he gets lucky. But give me Tuivasa, and you probably should have, I don't know, a good percentage of this fight in your lineups because of the inside the distance prop.
Is he Aussie or New Zealand?
Oh, New Zealand. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. That's sorry, Tui. No offense to anybody. I made a mistake. Yes, New Zealand. He's a New Zealander.
Right. Shame on you, Joe.
Yeah, sorry.
On that note, we'll go to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who I know is from America. He's $8,518. Gilbert Burns, $7,713. Look, I think we're inching closer to Stephen Thompson and Kamaru Usman. And I'm here for it. I don't think Burns can get a takedown. If he does, he's obviously live to win in a finish. I just don't think he gets it. Thompson, clearly the better striker. We saw what damage an Usman jab did to him. Like, Wonder Boy should have his way in the feet. It's a matter of scoring. Wonder Boy's been putting up some decent numbers, actually. Like, deceptively so at 8,500. And I think people are going to shy away from him. So for that reason, I'm on Steven Wonderboy Thompson. I'm probably going to be over the field to him. Gilbert Burns is fine because it takes one time this fight goes to the ground, and I think he will submit Thompson. I just don't think he gets there. But he's live for GPPs. I'm not saying to fade him, but Thompson is my preferred play. Joe, who you got?
Yeah, I have Wonderboy. I mean, Wonderboy has been taken down, I believe, 7 times totally in the UFC, and 5 of them were by Matt Brown when Crocs were cool. 1 time by Tyron, and twice by Tyron Woodley, 1 in each fight. So he's not the easiest guy in the world to take down anyway. I started the week thinking that Burns was live, like thinking, okay, you know, he's got quick hands. Showtime Pettis, you know, Superman punched Burns and KO'd him. I'm sorry, Superman punched Thompson and KO'd him. But I think actually Thompson learned from that and has been a better fighter since then. So I like Thompson here. He's reasonably priced. Also, Brett Apley likes him a lot, you know, which, you know, that's kind of an influencer in my mind. The issue with Thompson is the scoring. Like he's a counterpuncher. However, people that bring the fight to him, he's more likely to score better against. You know, when he fought Woodley, it was just like nails on the blackboard. Like, they just looked at each other, you know, for most of the fight. So I don't think Burns is that kind of fighter. I don't see him trying to be tentative against Wonder Boy. I don't see him as that kind of fighter. So I like Wonder Boy here. I'll have a few shares of Burns. I'd be very surprised if Burns not only could take him down, but held him down for a period of time. We'll see. His best shot is when they're all kind of dry in the first round, because Burns seems to have an adrenaline dump. I would encourage everybody who is contemplating taking a big position in Burns to go back and watch the Hooker Burns fight. There's no reason Wonderboy can't do to Burns what Hooker did. Because I think Wonderboy is a better version of Dan Hooker. So I would say go watch that fight. I do like Wonderboy here, but I will have a few shares of Burns.
Chris.
So that's the first thing that came into my mind when this fight was booked. It was the Dan Hooker fight. Just another long guy who can counterpunch. Dropped him with a counter straight and then finished him with a counter hook. And in between there, chewed him up with leg kicks. Stephen Thompson can do all of those things better than Dan Hooker could. And so I think you have to pick Stephen Thompson, and I also think you're right about people who bring the fight to him. We saw how well he did against Vicente Luque. People just think you can walk through what Stephen Thompson is going to do to you. You can't do that. I think people got lulled to sleep because of some of those boring fights, but he is a dangerous striker. The one thing I would say is that we know that Gilbert Burns is very strong. He almost took down Usman, which I think is, you know, an accomplishment in itself, because he got closer than anyone else has ever gotten. Also got closer to beating him than anyone in the UFC has ever gotten. Wobbled him with a punch. I still think Thompson has to be worried about that, although, like, I wouldn't be worried about anybody replicating the Superman punch off the cage. But I do think that he has to be worried about a couple of things here. I just don't see Burns fading what Wonder Boy brings. I think it's going to be too much. If he catches him, if he takes him down, he's definitely got pads. I would say don't ignore him, but I think Wonder Boy here, and if people write him off again, you know, I think that score could be pretty high, maybe an accumulative second or third round knockout. So after some a big confluence of strikes, so I'm going Wonder Boy.
All right, main event time. Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, both are 8,100 on DraftKings. Poirier, $20 on FanDuel. McGregor, $19. Load up on this fight. Should be action-packed. I am still on the Poirier side. And
Look, it's funny. It's when you break down the McGregor fight, you're either a McGregor hater or a McGregor nut hugger. It's just so I'm gonna go through like facts here. Since the Jose Aldo knockout, since 2015, it's 6 years ago. It's a long time in MMA. He's beaten Nate Diaz and Donald Cerrone and Eddie Alvarez. I should take it back. Alvarez was his best win. But Eddie Alvarez left the UFC and, you know, just doesn't look to be the same guy. I almost think the UFC lightweight division is so good, it's kind of passed up McGregor. I pick him over a lot of guys in that top five, personally, including Islam Makhachev, but that's a whole other conversation. Whereas Dustin Poirier, on the other hand, is staying active. You know, he's beaten Dan Hooker, beat Max Holloway, beat Justin Gaethje, like had, you know, a better performance in my mind against Habib, but not by much. They both got smashed. Let's be honest. The Dan Hooker fight, he's been in these wars. And if you don't want to go off just the what have they done for me lately because McGregor's out being a superstar, great. The analysis part is I really believe that Poirier is tough enough that even if McGregor has a better showing than last time, he's tough enough to drag this fight into deep water and drown McGregor there. Because I don't think McGregor can keep up a pace for five rounds. I just don't. I know Poirier can. I don't think McGregor can do it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think, you know, and Poirier could wrestle. I know McGregor, I think, has deceptively good takedown defense. But I think he, you know, if anyone's going to wrestle, it's going to be Poirier. So all these things makes me lean Poirier. It is close. I'm not slam dunking it, but I am in the Poirier camp. DraftKings, stack it up. Just move on in cash games, in my opinion, because it's a close fight. And if you want to run just one of them, do yourself a favor. Just go make a bet because that's what you're doing. Just go bet the fight. For DraftKings cash games, stack it up. Or if you like other lineups I haven't even looked at yet, play neither. I wouldn't play one or the other. Just I think that's way too cute. FanDuel's a little bit more expensive. I would honestly probably play neither on FanDuel. They're just too – they price up the main event so much. That's how I would approach it. And GPPs? It's, I'm going to say an 85%er because like Joe mentioned, these guys are going to approach 95% ownership combined. Like just mix in some lineups without both, because if it hits, that's how you're going to take down big money, not with one of these two guys in it. So that's my long-winded take on the main event. Chris, you get to follow that piece of DFS commentary gold.
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said, but what was the first fight you said that McGregor won?
That he won, he's beaten. I said Nate Diaz, but he lost that fight. He lost one of them too.
No. But the first guy you said he knocked out, who was that?
McGregor.
The first guy McGregor knocked out. You said he knocked out who?
Knocked out.
Doesn't matter.
Eddie Alvarez.
No, I was trying to make a Jose Aldo joke, but it's taking too long. You were gonna say Jose Aldo, and I was gonna say I don't remember that because it doesn't matter. It took too long, and maybe we should rehearse this. But
you ruined it.
Bring
better jokes.
I know. You know what? I was going for the big setup, and it didn't materialize. But I think the first thing you got to say about this fight is I think you did a great job breaking it down. DFS-wise, strategically, our analysis-wise, I would say that, look, McGregor basically had to learn a new phase of MMA in 6 months. He didn't know what a calf kick was. He came back to that press conference the apes in Planet of the Apes who found the thing on Mars, what do you call it? He was flummoxed by it, and I don't trust him to learn a new phase of MMA in basically less than 6 months. The other thing is, I mean, you mentioned all the layoffs, Sean. That's always going to be a problem for him, in my view. I mean, this is actually the least amount of time he's taken off between fights since Eddie Alvarez. It's always like a year, 2 years. So that really says something. And even if I didn't think about any of that, there's always that gas tank issue. It's always been there. It was there in the Habib fight. I was probably there in the Poirier fight too, although it got overshadowed by the leg kicking. And I think this is just a scenario where you have to pick Poirier, but you can't be surprised if McGregor wins, because McGregor still hit him hard, and even by Poirier's own recollection, really hurt him. I think in the second round, he said, in the early second round. So I think Poirier is tough enough to withstand a two. Hasn't been knocked out since that Michael Johnson fight, which people make too big of a deal out of. Again, we go back to the Ryan Hall thing. He got caught with a shot. I think if you run that fight back, I think it's pretty easy to see who the pick would be, at least. But yeah, I'm going Poirier here. You have to have a lot of both. I get what you're saying, Sean, but I think that the chances of it are so minuscule that I wouldn't go more than a few lineups not having either one of them, just because I don't see how this ends anywhere else but a finish. Conor McGregor has literally never lost in any other way by finish. I think he only has a couple, maybe two or three wins by submission, by decision. So I think it ends inside the distance. I think Poirier rides out the early storm and gets another finish and scores really well.
Okay, so for those that maybe have been keeping track, I flipped on two of my earlier picks that I submitted to RotoWire earlier in the week, and that was Aldana and and Burns. I went with Wonderboy and Kuniskaya. I am not flipping on this pick. I like McGregor here. It pains me, but I do. I think he's more hyper-focused for this fight. For those of you that don't know, Dana White won $7 million playing blackjack. And I would not be at all surprised if he slipped some of that money to Dustin, because the UFC desperately wants McGregor to win this fight. There is a Charles Du Bronx Oliveira $2 million pay-per-view fight behind this. There is a trilogy with Diaz. There's a lot that can happen with McGregor. Not that because an organization wants a fighter to win that they're going to win. We did see that McGregor hurt Dustin. Dustin obviously is very good at taking damage. I have nothing but respect for the guy. I'm going to have a lot of shares of Dustin. I will say that I am not stacking in cash. So anybody who wants to play me, I think
the fight just better.
I think the fight is going to end early, and the stack is not going to be worthwhile. But I like McGregor here. I think he is starting to get into Dustin's head, like he did in the first fight.
I don't have that read at all.
I got that read a little bit, but again, I don't think it's as important as I do think he's hyper-focused. I do think he had a much better camp. There's the $7 million in blackjack money that Dana White won. If I was a conspiracy theorist, I would say that this is the guy that the UFC wants to win for obvious reasons. Again, not that it matters. I will have a lot of Dustin. I will not be hurt by Dustin winning. So let me just kind of put that on the table. But, I'm being asked to pick a winner for this, and I'm going to pick McGregor.
All right, guys, hot take time. Let me pull up my chat button here so I can see some of these. Post your hot takes in chat. We'll see what we got. I can't read these on my screen.
I'll give you my hot take. I'll give you my hot take while Chris, reads some. I already bet this. I have got Max Griffin by submission plus 1600. So I took a small stab at that. I think it's got a shot. Not a lot, but I took a small little stab. And, that's my hot take.
I gotta find one real quick here. Let's go with my hot take. Will be, I'm gonna get something real hot this week.
Jennifer Maya's on the optimal.
Oh God, that would just be.
No, that is not my hot take.
That would be bananas. All right, let's say we are gonna see. I actually think it's going to be a high-scoring card. I think we're going to see three 60-second bonuses.
Wow.
Wow.
If you want me to try and pick them, I'm going to try and
pick them. Yeah, you got to pick them now.
Well, I mean, this is pretty easy.
No, I'm not going to go for the main event. I'm not going to do it.
No. Nope. Well, look, Sean, Sugar Shane O'Malley, Tuivasa Hardy. Come on, and who else?
I'm going to go Sean O'Malley, Yao Zhang Hu, Nico Price.
Yao Zhang Hu is a good one. I like that.
Okay. Hot take, Chris.
Okay, mine is not as inventive. I'm just going to say Trevin Giles finishes Dricus du Plessis.
What's Giles by finish? It's probably decent.
Ooh. It's probably pretty decent, yeah. And then after this, you're going to put respect on his name.
Okay, probably not. I'll probably still pick against them.
I know you will.
Giles inside the distance is 325.
Nice. Wow. Of course, yeah. You should get down on that.
Yeah, that's true.
300 gets you 1,000. Come on.
Yeah.
Big money. All right, you got some in chat, Chris, before we get out of here?
I do not see any in the chat. Everybody's asleep. They were spellbound by our excellent analysis. They couldn't add anything else. That was
not to mention we have the unfortunate the timing is very unfortunate. I almost suggested that we switch our timing because I think Lock of the Night has got a super pod going right now with James Krause, Nick Kalikas, and Yanni the Greek. I don't know how he got those three guys.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to tune into that. So it might be in direct conflict with our pod here, which, you know.
Well, you know what? As much as I like Lock, this is better content. This is you guys will watch it on the replay and be sorry.
He generally starts at 9, but I think one of the guys had a hard stop or something, so he had to. They might have started it earlier, but that's gonna be lit. My boy Lock of the Night. So,
All right, guys, make sure you go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all the premium content. No credit card required. Enjoy the card. Joe, I'll see you tomorrow. Let's post some screenshots. Good luck in those contests. We'll see everybody next time.
Peace.
Thanks, everybody.
Sean, hang on for a sec.